This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, Saturday's my favorite day.
It is.
And I'm ready.
Yes.
And I had a lot of people talk to me about Mother's Day. I know a lot of things that happen on Mother's Day to different people. Some really funny things happen on Mother's Day. You know, a lot of people said, well, you know, we're going to go out. And then they said, well, let's cancel our reservation. Something came up. They canceled. Then the next day they said, well, we'll just order in. The restaurants were not even answering the phone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I had people tell me they finally ate at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They couldn't get people to answer. They couldn't order in. I had one family. This is hilarious. They said, well, we'll go to Chicken Express and just pick up chicken and things like that. And later they said, they have closed. They weren't even open. They're no longer in business.
Really?
Yes. Oh. So they couldn't even get it. I mean, it was hilarious. Wow. I talked to a family in Florida, friends of mine, and they said they finally went to this place at 3:30. And they went in the back, and they said, well, we'll have a steak and vegetables and everything. They brought the steak, and she said the steak was wavy. And the waitress says, oh, that's really bad. We'll get another one. And she said, it's probably going to be as bad as this one. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
Wavy stuff.
I heard more stories on Mother's Day. And usually you never hear these funny stories.
Yeah.
But people just couldn't get anything to eat. Because if you ever cancel your reservation, chances the next day of on a Sunday of getting anything to eat is impossible.
Oh, yeah.
Because every restaurant in town was full. I don't care what town in Texas. Everything was full. You know, the lines were long.
Yeah.
If you had reservations at 1, you're outside standing there holding the door open. I mean, it was that bad. Oh, me. So a lot of people had Mother's Day out, to say the least.
Wow.
Yes, and I know I got 2 dozen roses. They were gorgeous.
Oh.
Everybody I talked to, most people got flowers. They got some of these new products, a lot of spa deals. I heard about those.
Oh, those are always good.
Those are always good. You can't miss on that. And a lot of people got gift certificates. Everybody did good by their mothers this year. They gave a lot.
Good.
And I heard a lot of good stories from mothers, how they remembered her, how they took her to lunch. You know, the grandchildren were there, the children were there, and a good time was had by all.
Good. And that's the way it should be for Mother's Day.
That's right. As I said, I heard a lot of good stories, good reports. They treated their mothers royally, to say the least. So I have not heard of anybody that didn't have a wonderful Mother's Day.
Except for the food situation.
Except for food. They might not have got a very nice meal, but they spent the time with their family.
Yeah.
So that was important. And then a lot of little children made cards for their mother.
Oh.
They made drawings for their mother. And they'll want to keep those forever. And then all the photographs. I mean, there must be a million pictures taken on Mother's Day.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Everybody all dressed up
get
together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At their finest. That's the only day that you're going to see everybody in a suit and a tie and dressed really nice.
Yes.
So it's a good time to take all your pictures.
Yes. Especially if you have nice weather.
Yes, and the weather was gorgeous.
Perfect. Good. Well, that sounds amazing.
So anyway, that was my report on Mother's Day.
Wow. I didn't realize that the food thing was had gotten quite so out of hand. That's kind of...
It did. It was out of hand in Texas, I can tell you.
Man.
It was not a good situation. I talked to several people, and they thought they weren't going, then they were going, and they didn't realize you can't get back. Once that reservation's gone, it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
They booked it for somebody else within minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Every restaurant was full. They were running out of food. I mean, it was hilarious. I mean, you know, what you thought you were going to get, you weren't going to get. You know?
Wow.
Yeah. Everybody started out, they were going to have this wonderful buffet. You know, 50 kinds of meat, salads, all this. And in the end, I talked to people that had a dadgum sandwich. I talked to two different people. They finally ordered sandwiches. That's all they could get. And I was laughing. I go, this sounds pretty tough.
Wow.
Yeah. And people just, they weren't going to cook. They'd already made up their mind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're not cooking for Mother's Day. We're going out. And it turned into a wonderful thing for some people and a disaster for others.
Well, at least they have a great memory and a great story to tell. That's always something.
That's right. They've got some good stories to tell. I didn't get to hear all of them, but I did hear several. And they were funny.
Well, yes. Then good. It'll go down as one of the most memorable Mother's Day of 2022.
That's right. They ought to put that in their books, you know, about everything that happened, because nobody will believe it 10 years from now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. In this fast-moving society, you know, things are moving fast.
Oh, yeah, they are. Moving fast, and then it's on to the next. Boom, 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 boom.
On to the next. That's right.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you had a good Mother's Day then. That was fantastic.
Yes, I did. I had a wonderful Mother's Day.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. There's a lot of good things on the website.
Oh, yeah.
And we're working this week on maturities. We hunt far and wide for all these maturities. We have three services that we use just for maturities. So we're looking up all these policies. You know, we have 156 policies.
Really?
It's a lot of policies to keep up with. It's a lot to check the status of the policies, to see if somebody's died and we don't have it recorded yet. We're working on that. Then, you know, we've got a lot of people that have had maturities, money's in their bank, and we should be ready to roll that over. And a lot of people said this week, well, I'm waiting for a maturity. Well, if they would go ahead and invest in this, and then when they have the maturity, we'll put that maturity in another policy.
And that's...
So, you know, you can do that. It's all right to go ahead and invest now, because you've got a lot of cash on hand, everybody does. You've got a lot of cash on hand. The best way I would do it, in my opinion, is I would reinvest this money, and then when the maturities come in and we find out about them, then you can put that in a different policy. So that's, you know, that was maybe my suggestion, because we had two or three policies this week we're working on that we've sent out to people to get in, and the premiums are very, very low on them. They're less than 1%, so that's as good as you can get.
Yeah,
when it's like 0.25, 0.35, you know, you'll never even notice it if it goes over. So it's a good thing. There's some good policies out there, you know, that we're doing, and I'd like to see everybody get in these policies and make some money, because when your money's just sitting there, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, if your money isn't growing, you know, then your money. If you're not making money, you're losing money.
That's exactly right. So the best thing to do, I know lots of times people think, oh, I don't want to spend any more money till I make some money. But you can be making money in the meantime while you're waiting on your other maturities.
Yeah, it's almost
not going
like,
to affect your maturities.
Yeah, you get as many policies going as possible, and at least let them sit on the back burner and simmer, so that you're in policies, and then you're just waiting for them to mature, and when they do, reinvest. Kind of like leapfrog, like you invest.
It is, and we have a lot of policies that are coming due. I think they may be a month late, 2 months late, or they may be on time. But we've got several policies we're watching right now for maturities. We've got several that I think are going to be maturing right away. So we're watching those, find out the maturity date. As soon as we know, we'll tell the people, about the maturities. But we're working on those right now. And I think we've got several that probably have matured and we haven't discovered it yet. That happens all the time, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
When we're looking for them, we think that they haven't passed away, then we'll find, oh, yes, they have. So we report that as soon as we can every time to help people out, where they'll know they've got money coming. Always good when you know that you've got a maturity.
What's a good rough estimate for, and I know everybody's a little bit different, but basically speaking, what's a good number of policies that people should be in at any particular time?
Well, they should be fully invested most of the time. And I would say, you've got to have, 8 or 10 policies.
Hmm.
And a lot of our people have got 20 and 30.
Oh, wow.
And that's really a good portfolio. If you've got 20 or 30 policies as they come due, how much interest you're going to make. You know that you've got all these maturities that are going to happen. And that's what they're doing it for, is the interest on their money. If they were in the stock market this week, they weren't making any money, I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope that a lot of these people weren't, but I know a lot of people are with us, and then they also have stock market also. If they do, the stock market is whiplashing right now,
Yeah.
It's down a lot.
How much? And, what was the overall number that people have lost? Because I know it's huge.
They said it was a huge amount, billions. But it said it was down 10%.
Oh,
that's
man.
A lot. It's a lot of market loss when it's down 10%.
Wow.
And, yes.
How are people reacting?
I was watching it a little bit. Well, a lot of people are being very cautious after all this because it has lost a lot. The Dow was at 34,000. It's down to like 32, just barely 32 right now. The S&P is way down. All of them are down. And they were talking about how many billions had lost this week.
Would you characterize?
Like Netflix is down a lot.
Oh yeah, I heard they were like record lows, weren't they?
Yes, they were. Netflix was really low, and a lot of these have lost a lot of money, and it takes a while, for that to come back or to get your money back.
And Netflix, I think that was the first time that they had ever been in that kind of territory. They've always just been doing gangbusters. But then all of a sudden, this is the first time that they've ever lost big like that.
That's what I was led to believe also. And a lot of them had lost so much. They were in such bad territory. I don't know how it's going to end up.
Wow. Would you call it cautious, or would you call it, characterize it more as like panic?
Well, I would panic and take my money out. That's what I would do. I don't know what people are going to do. But the NASDAQ, to give you for instance, was down 137.
Oh, Lord.
That's a lot. And the Dow, last time I checked, was down to 31,000.
Wow.
That's 197 off, 197.
Man.
And S&P, everybody was talking about it, that it was way down for the first time.
Well, there was some talk, I think it was in the last couple of months that we were talking, and you had said that people were saying that they may anticipate some kind of an event or something at some point, possibly this year. Could this be what they were looking at, or is this, you think, foreshadowing something bigger?
I don't know. They said the inflation and the interest rates, these people are worried, and they said the stock market is in bubble territory.
Uh-oh.
And Citibank urges caution.
Man.
And, of course, I've always said you have to be prepared, you know, to lose. And if you lose, you don't make any money. Your money's there, but it's not as much as you had.
So what should people do if they're in this situation and they're looking at their portfolio and they've got, you know, maybe they're diversified in stocks, or maybe they've got a little this, a little that. Should they, like, withdraw everything, or should they just start exploring options, or should...
I would be doing something different. And the sell-off in stocks, Morgan Stanley says it's not over.
Really?
Yes, it is. We're not at the bottom yet.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And I don't know. I know that I'm not in the stock market, and I hate to see people lose money. And if it was me, I would not be in the stock market. But sometimes people panic. They go get in the stock market. They think they're going to make all this money. But I doubt if they are.
Man. And, of course, people that are in life settlements are not affected by things like this, because the policy still holds its value no matter what happens, no matter how much the
right.
stock market goes down. Policies, that they hold. It doesn't affect anything.
No. The value of their portfolio is going to stay the same no matter what happens. It's not going to go down. It's guaranteed at the rate they went in. Life insurance companies don't pay you a portion. They pay you 100% on the dollar. And that's why that we do this, because it's a safer investment, because it doesn't have the downturn that you have in the stock market. In fact, one of the people that came to me the other day has a large portfolio. And he says, I want to do something different. And he said, I want to take, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 and put it in life settlements and not have it all in the stock market. And I think that was a smart move. To have it all in the stock market is, you know, when it crashes, it hurts for a long time.
Oh, yeah. There's a long recovery when those things happen.
Very long.
Geez, we remember 2008.
I know. We were there for that, weren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And people were coming in crying. They'd like, one guy, and if you remember, and I won't say the name of the brokerage house, he'd just given him this money. He lost $50,000 that week.
Oh, man. That's rough.
And I had some people call this week about, you know, us helping them with some things. And I asked the guy, I said, well, what about the stocks you have? He said, I haven't made any money in several months. He said, it's way down. So people need to rethink how they're doing things, be more cautious, you know, don't just be gung-ho because your neighbor's got some money in the stock market, or you hear the people in New York talk. Remember, New York is a long way from Texas.
Yeah, it is.
They do things a lot different. There's certain people probably do make money, but not everybody makes money just because they're there. We see it all the time. And I noticed that Chase Bank took $80 billion and moved it to ETFs out of mutual funds.
Really?
Yeah, so they're getting to safety. They're not leaving everything in mutual funds.
Wow.
So, you know, we just glance at the stock market. We wonder what they're all about sometimes, why they're doing the things they're doing. But we're thankful that we're in something that it's a life insurance policy. It doesn't have the ups and downs. Yes, your policy may go over... But you know what? It's safe. Your money's always safe. It's in an insurance policy. So that's the good thing about what we do. And then, you know, we're paying 1% a month. Like if it's a 24-month policy, you'll get 24%. And with these cheap premiums right now, these policies, no matter what happens, it's not going to cost you hardly anything. I wish all the policies had the cheap premiums. And they eventually will. As we turn these, they will have the cheaper premiums at all times. Never again will there be any high premiums.
Yeah, this
We're
is a whole.
See that.
This seems to be like the whole focus of you know things as we kind of move through the process. I know you kind of like you go back and study data and you know look at all the parameters that you normally have followed just to make sure they're still applicable and they still are profitable for people. And this is another one of those things. It seems like the last several, probably the last short while anyway, the big focus has been really, really, really low premiums, like below 1%. So, yeah.
That's right. We're trying to get everything below 1%. Used to, we thought you could do 3%. We don't believe that anymore. We believe that you've got to be 1% or less. And that's what we're doing now. We've turned down policies this week that were like 3.65. We said, no, you know, we can't do that. The people need that premium down where they can invest and make money no matter what happens, that the premium won't scare them, that their expenses will be low, and then they'll always have a good profit. So that's what we've done. We're in that territory now where it's got to be less than 1%. That's what we're doing. We're trying to make everything less. We could go as high as 2%, but never again will it be 3%, ever.
It just makes bigger profits.
And we want them to have more profit and not have any worries when they do it. We don't want them worried about their portfolio with us. They've got enough to worry about the way it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're being more cautious. We're helping people a lot. We're trying to make sure they're invested in great policies. We're checking and rechecking policies. We're reading all the medical. We turned one down this week. A lady lawyer in Austin, Texas, she'd had this cancer and all this, and we got to reading the medical, and it's in remission, and she doesn't have it right now.
Oh, wow.
They were trying to sell the policy, but the woman is in remission. So we said, you know, let somebody else buy that.
Yeah.
Somebody that's not going to check all the medical on her. But we did, and we turned it down.
Last week, we had a kind of a – you talked a lot about annuities. How does
– Yes, we did.
Like something that happens like this week when we see, you know, the stock market going, you know, crazy.
Sideways.
What does this – how does that affect like annuities and things like that?
Okay, it does not affect an annuity because, first of all, an annuity will just sit there. If the stock market goes down, the annuity does not go down. It just sits there. You might not make any money that month, but you won't lose a dime. The stock market is just a perimeter. In other words, your money is always safe. It's in the annuity. And if the annuity goes down, the interest rate, it'll just sit there. If it makes money, it locks it in at the end of the year. But you never have a loss on an annuity. That's the great thing. It does not go down like the stock market. Your money's always safe. It's in an annuity. An annuity is safer than anything we do. There's not anything as safe as an annuity.
Really?
It pays a lot more interest than most things. You know, at the end of 10 years, you can walk away, take all your money out. You can take a lifetime income. You can take interest only. It has so many options. And remember, with an annuity, it's all tax deferred till you start taking it out. You're not paying any taxes until you start taking it out. That's the great part.
Is it fair to say that probably an annuity is a longer term investment than maybe a life settlement just because you're picking life policies that are 20, 30 months?
Yes.
Okay.
An annuity is a long-term contract. They're like 5 years, 7 years, or 10 years. And I was just thinking the other day, you know, annuity companies, which are life insurance companies, are worth more than most banks. Do you realize that?
Really?
Well, you know, they're worth $60 billion, $100 billion, some of them worth $300 billion.
Good Lord.
And your local banks in this are not worth that much. Go look at their bottom lines. They're small. They're not that big. Now, when you get to the great big banks, your national banks, they are. But the smaller banks are not. So when you do an annuity, you're dealing with a huge life insurance company. They have assets that you wouldn't even imagine. They can pay better. All these people that had CDs, you had to give them the CD. They didn't pay anything. Annuities now, if you want just a CD rate, they'll pay 3%.
Hmm.
You know. But if you want to make money, you can go into the indexes, do a 2-year index or a 1-year index. And at the end of that time, they put your interest in your account and lock it in each year. So that's what's so good about an annuity. Also, all your beneficiaries are in there. You can change beneficiaries. You can do it any way you want. Or you can, at the end of the term, you say, okay, I'm going to take it out and use it for myself. Yeah. Or I don't need it. I'm going to leave it to the grandchildren. I'm going to leave it to my children. And you just set it up that way, and they get it when you pass away. You have use of it till you die.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember last week you were talking about, you know, people setting them up for, like, college and things like that. I was like,
they do,
goodness,
yes, all the time.
I didn't even know.
and lots of times they'll set up something for their grandchildren or nieces or nephews. Lots of times people don't have children, but they have nephews and nieces that they want to leave their money to. So they'll do it through an annuity. They'll do it outside of the estate. They may want to put these people in the estate and these others in an annuity that passes directly to that person.
Okay. you had said something, and it's been a long time since we've gone over this, but I just want to remember, so clarify this for me. You've said, I think, that in the past, life insurance companies have the all of the resources on hand. So in theory, if every policy came, you know, matured in the same day, they could pay them all out, whereas banks don't. Is that, am I getting that right, or am I remembering this wrong?
Well, that's basically right. In other words, an annuity, every time you write an annuity, you've got to put up reserves against it. Remember that? You have to put up reserves in case that policy came due tomorrow. You can't just say, oh, I'll put up reserves at 5 years from now or 10. You have to have reserves up from the start. If you write an annuity and tomorrow, you've got to have the interest available to pay that thing off. If that person died tomorrow, you've got to be able to pay it off. So banks don't have to put up as much as an annuity company. They've always made them pay a lot. They've always made them put up a huge amount. And banks are not required to put up that much against their accounts. So the spread is a lot different with an annuity versus a bank.
And with banks, and stop me if I'm saying this the wrong way, but with a bank, if something drops out, they can literally pay pennies on the dollar, whereas a life insurance company won't. They'll pay out the full value.
That's right. If a bank goes under, they only have to pay a certain amount. But when you've got an annuity, they have to pay 100% on the dollar. They're not going to say, oh, well, we're having a bad year. We don't want to give you all your money. You can't do that. Annuity companies are regulated by state and national. They are audited by both sets. And they have to have their reserves up. When they audit you, everything better be there. So they're audited more than anybody in the world.
I'm sure.
Yeah, they are.
I'm sure every other day it's a headache for them. Oh, no, not again. So between the two then, between the two options, between life insurance, we'll say like a life settlement and an annuity, is there anyone that's more safe? And the reason I ask is because if people are looking at the stock market and they're saying, you know, it might be time to start doing some other things. We're not just exactly sure what. If they're weighing the two options, is there one that would be better than the other?
Yes, annuity is safer than anything. Annuity is always safe. It's the best of all worlds is an annuity because you know that they can pay off. You know they're not going to ever hold you up on it. The annuity contracts, at the end of that time, it's spelled out in big, bold language. Either you can take a payout, you can take cash. It gives you all your options when you start. And at the end of that term, they're going to honor it. So you don't have to worry about it. It's not going to run over. It's not going to go late. It's either 5, 7, or 10 years. It's a long-term contract. If you don't use it, it's for your grandchildren or your children or your nephews and nieces. That's what an annuity does. A life settlement is different. When I offer them both to people, younger people want a life settlement. They want that profit. They like the idea of investing their money and turning it. Everybody wants to turn their money. They want to get the interest. And it pays more. There's not any doubt about it. It will pay more, but it's different, okay? An annuity is a different client, usually, than a life settlement client.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so people should basically know that, I guess the bottom line is whether you go the route of annuities or life settlements, there are safer options, more conservative. Well, maybe that's a better way to say it. More conservative options.
Yeah, more conservative, right?
All right, cool.
Or you can do both. You can say, I need some of it in annuities, and I need some of it in life settlements. I have one client that had $1 million. He has a lot of money with us. And he said, Faye, I think I want an annuity. Well, in the end, he said, no, I'm making too much money. I'm going to stay with the life settlements. But you never know. You know, you never know. You know, he's pretty young. You know, he's just in his 60s. So he decided that he'd rather make the bigger amount of money and turn his money, you know, every 2 years or every 3 years, rather than just sitting back and clipping coupons, so to speak.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so now when he gets older, he may change. He may have me do it different, you know. So you just never know.
And
when people get older, they think different. They change their minds about things.
Yeah.
So they think one way in their 60s, in their 70s, they're going to think different.
And that's normal, I would say, because people probably, as they get closer to retirement, they're thinking, you know, earlier in life, we could afford, you know, if something happens, you know, we have some recovery time before retirement to kind of gain whatever we lose back. But as you get closer, that window, you know, you don't want to have major losses, you know, a year before before retirement, because your opportunity to get that back is a little bit smaller. So, yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah. And as you get older, you're going to think different. And I have a lot of people that say, you know, I don't want to be in the stock market when I retire. It's too risky. And that's why they come to us. They say, you know, as long as I was working, you know, it was okay. But now that we're going to retire, we can't stand it. And you know, we do not want that risk in our life. So they get out of the stock market. They do something with us where they know that the money is safe.
Yeah. The last thing you want to do is to be forced into going back to work at when you're 78 or something like that.
That's not a good option.
That's not a good option.
Yes, it's not. And I have people that are retiring early. I talked to people this week. The man had $500,000, and he's thinking about retiring. He's only in his 60s.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to say, I don't think that's enough to retire on.
Wow.
But I did not say that. I said, we need to talk about it, you know? And a lot of people are saying, let's talk about our estate. Well, you've got to talk about all of it. You can't talk about just part of it. You've got to say, okay, I've got this much now. How much will I have in 2 years when I get ready to retire? Can I make enough that I can take out the money I want? You know, they're saying don't take the 4%. I don't think you can live on the 4% out of your portfolio. They're saying people should go back down. Don't take but 4% a year. And unless you've got a lot of money, 4% ain't going to do it.
Wow. So it's important to look at the big picture and consider everything.
You have to look at the big picture. How much will I have in 5 years, 2 years, 3 years? How much do my wife and I have combined income to live on once we retire? Do we have enough? Is it guaranteed? That's the other big thing, the word. Do we have guaranteed money? If it's all in the stock market, it isn't guaranteed for one day.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that's your risk. Can we risk everything in the stock market once we say we're going to retire? When do we make the change? When do we say we have to have guaranteed money the day we retire? We do not want this in the stock market. So you have to consider that.
I would imagine that would be probably a very difficult way to retire, having to still get up, you know, in the middle of the night every night just to check your portfolio and see, you know, can we stay retired or do we have to go back to work tomorrow? That's not a good way to retire.
That's right. You have to retire safe, happy, and know that your portfolio is in the right thing.
Yeah, it's all about peace of mind.
And it is. And if you retire, then you find out the stock market has done what it has this week, dropped this much, and you look and see how much you have left. Everybody should be checking their portfolios right now and saying, okay, it's down this much. How much more is it going to drop? You know, what am I in? That's what they better consider. What do they have me invested in? Am I in Netflix? Am I in Apple? Am I in all these things that's over their head right now?
Yeah, man.
All these losers. Yeah. And, you know, people don't make their own choices. This is the sad part. Somebody else is calling the shots on your portfolio, and they have nothing to lose. It's not their money. If they lose you $500,000 or $1 million or $250,000, they say, I'm sorry. It's the market. It's just the market. Well, that's not a good answer when it's your life savings.
No.
You don't want them to say it's just the market. Market risk is something you don't want to talk about if you're 60 years old.
Mm-mm.
You don't want to hear about that. You want to hear about, I've made money. It's on track. It's going up all the time. I've got all this profit. You better get it out if you've got all that profit. But they probably don't now. It's probably down to where they don't have as much profit left as they had a year ago.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's all interesting. Everybody has to make their own choices, but it depends how conservative you are.
It's getting
real.
Whether
you're going to get out of the stock market. Yeah. You have to talk about real things. And out here in the heartland, our money is important. That's all we've got to retire on.
Yeah.
So you don't want to go out here and have too much in Bitcom or, you know, all these fancy deals that we talk about. That in Texas now, Bitcom is really, really big, you know. But, you know, sometimes they come in and they steal it out of those accounts. So, again, you've got a risk. And I personally don't think I would ever invest in the Bitcom business.
No.
That doesn't sound like me. I mean, you know, just like all these people that buy these gold coins, they advertise them every week. And I've been following it. And it doesn't look to me like they made any money. Yeah, I can't figure that out. If they're buying gold bars, yes. But all these coins, remember, I have that one guy, if you remember the story, and when he decided to get rid of them, they told him what the cost would be to sell them, and he almost fell on the ground.
Wow.
His wife said, you've lost 45,000 in coins.
Yikes.
Sell them today, or we're going to get a divorce.
And those are the magic words.
That's the magic words. He came to me, he said, pay him down 45,000 of those coins. He said, I need to sell them and get out. And he did. He brought us the money, and as far as I know, they're still married. He hadn't done anything else foolish lately.
And they lived happily ever after.
They lived happily ever after, you know. But, you know, when you invest in risky things, you have to be prepared for the consequences. You have to say, okay, this is not solid straight down the line. It has big ups and big downs. And you have to think about that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people see it on television. It looks exciting. It's pretty. And they buy it.
And they don't understand it. And they have no control.
They do not understand it. They have none.
Wow. Boy, it's some scary stuff, especially this when things like this week happen. I know we talk about them quite frequently about, you know, anything could happen at any time. And there's, you know, all this buzz about this and that and the other thing. But boy, when you see it and you see those numbers and you know, that 10%, that will, you know, that'll linger for a long time. And it really kind of that's a jarring situation we're in. That's for sure.
That's right. And everybody has to really be on their toes right now. And they better be paying attention.
Yeah, no doubt. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 588-3330. Did I say that good enough? 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we get to do trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
It's a great story. I'm excited about it. It's the story of Edward Lassiter. He was a real Grand Valley pioneer. Now, this is 1895, okay? He had a ranch that had 350,000 acres.
Wow.
Biggest ranch in Texas in the 1800s. Now, let me tell you the story. He wanted to start a dairy farm. He bought 7,000 cows from the King Ranch. He created the largest dairy farm in the world. In the world, not just the U.S., the world.
Really?
And he launched Falfurrious Butter. Falfurrious Butter was first made in 1909.
Wow.
Now, this butter, and I used to buy it, but I didn't know what happened to it. He named the butter after his Lassiter Ranch. It was named for a grove of trees called La Mata del Don Falfurrious. And the word Falfurrious came from the Lipan Apache language. So Falfurrious is an Indian name, and it translates the land of heart's delight.
Huh.
And it's, as I said, it's the largest Jersey cattle herd it was in the world.
That's impressive.
And it's very impressive. And this guy was so smart. I mean, 1909 to start making butter?
Jeez.
How many people would have had the guts to start a dairy herd of 7,000? How do you milk 7,000 Jersey cows?
That's quite an undertaking, especially at that time. It would still be now, but back then, whew.
I mean, you'd have to have so many employees. And it made popular the bumper sticker, "Watch your step, you're in Jersey country." Yes. And this butter was so popular, it was eventually bought by the Dairy Farmers of America.
Really?
And you still see signs down there that's what made Falfurrious, was the butter that they made. And it's still made in Texas, but it's made by Keller's Creamery in Winsboro, Texas. Now, I don't know what the name is. I know it's not called Falfurrious. Also, the first watermelon ever grown in Texas was grown in Falfurrious, also in 1909. First watermelons ever to come to Texas.
Really?
Were in Falfurrious, yes. A lot of firsts. And this is the best part of the story. There was a Texas Marine in World War II, and he was wading ashore in the Battle of Okinawa. A Falfurrious butter crate bumped up against his leg. He found it comforting and an assurance from home that all would be well. I mean, a Falfurrious butter crate brushed his leg in the water, and he said he knew that everything would be all right.
It's a sign.
It was a sign. I mean, I didn't know they were selling butter to the military, but obviously they were. Texas butter was in World War II. And, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was so shocked that right there in the water, the crate came ashore. Yeah, that's pretty neat, isn't it?
That is really cool.
Texas was represented far away. I mean, you don't ever know how far Texas have come.
Oh, no doubt.
And, of course, their post office was started in 1898 in Falfurrious.
Really?
Yes. So Falfurrious, Texas is famous, as I said. It was the biggest ranch back then, 350,000 acres.
That's amazing. That's huge.
It's so huge, I can't even comprehend it. And then 7,000 dairy cattle.
Man.
I mean, no telling how many people worked for him back then.
Good Lord.
Yeah, and I didn't find out who worked for him, how he got them, but I wonder if he I had Indians and everybody else, because Foul Furious came from the Lipan Apaches.
Really?
Yes. The word came from the Lipan Apache language. Hmm. So he obviously knew the Apaches.
He had some connections.
He had some connections with a lot of people. And anybody that could ranch 350,000 acres in 1895 had a lot going for him, wouldn't you say?
I would say they're very ambitious.
Very ambitious.
Or crazy.
I wouldn't want to be the one that was milking all those dadgum Jersey cattle, I'm going to tell you that.
Oh, Lord, no.
But I remember the butter really well, but I never did know what happened to it.
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember the butter, and I feel like I should.
Yeah.
But for some reason.
It was yellow with blue, as well as I remember.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yellow with blue, as well as I remember.
It's amazing also that, it's one of those inspiring stories where, you know, somebody started something really ambitious and then ended up selling it to the American Dairy Association. I mean, that's just...
Oh, yeah, the Dairy Farmers of America bought it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was such a big deal, you know. They could see, and I don't even know how much it sold for. There's no telling. And I don't know if any of his heirs are still here, but it's very famous in Foul Furious, Texas, for the butter and for Mr. Lassiter, the pioneer who started Foul Furious and his ranch.
Man.
Yeah.
It's just,
back
then, coming up with something like that, just, hey, you know, guess what? I'm going to start, you know, a 350,000 acre farm, and I want to do, how do you come up? You just swing for the fences right out of the gate. That's
right. And how did he know how to make butter and resell it in the 1800s? See, this guy was a genius.
Yeah. And then.
Because I could not imagine that you could say, okay, in the 1800s, we've got a way to ship it, a way to make it and sell it to people. I just don't know how they did it.
Yeah.
It would take a lot of research for me to follow up, but it's, it just amazes me.
Yeah. It's like this wild idea seemingly out of the blue. You know, it wasn't like he was following some kind of a trend that had already been established. It's like, hey, let's start this. And then you think of things like, and this is going to be a dumb question, I know, but how do you keep it cold? And, I mean, did they have refrigerators back then, or was it like ice boxes?
No,
or?
They didn't. And they had cellars. Used to, everything was in the cellar. So they had to have something underground to keep it cold.
Wow.
Yeah, they had to have some kind of cellars to do this, you know. But you can imagine they had wagons and horses to transport it. But how did they get it to market?
I don't know. Man, that's...
And if you've got 7,000 head, you've got a big amount of butter coming every day of your life.
Yeah.
You realize how much butter that would make?
I can't. It's too much for my brain to process.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to have hundreds of people just to process the butter every day and get it to somebody that wants to buy it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just an amazing story. They started this and was so successful, Dairy Farms of America bought it.
Wow. And then you think, you know, even as he's, you know, coming up with the whole idea, is there even a market for it? You know,
apparently he, and to have the money, think about that. What did it cost to buy 7,000 Jersey cattle?
Oh,
that'd be a huge amount.
Yeah.
Even back in the 1800s, 7,000 Jersey cattle.
Yeah. And then the people to milk them. You've got to pay them.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they might've come from across the border.
Maybe. Yeah. Wow.
I don't know. It was either Indians or Mexicans that were doing all this, I'm sure.
Wow. This is a big deal now, let alone around the turn of the century. That's
yeah,
a big deal.
In the 1800s, it was a huge deal. I don't know of anybody back then that would have had 350,000 acres.
Yeah. Man, that's just massive. That's huge by today's standards.
It is massive.
Wow.
That's right. And Laster was a brilliant man. I don't care what anybody says. Anybody that could do all this had to be very, very smart.
Man, I wonder how long it took to get from like a concept to where he was actually like profitable. Because it sounds like it happened very, very fast. Like all the pieces came together quickly.
I have no idea.
Man.
But it is an amazing guy. We don't know about his family or anything. But it would be interesting to know.
Man, what a great story. Jeez, and I had no idea any of that. Even it's never been in my mind at all, ever. Wow.
Well, can you imagine if you'd lived during that period of 1800 and 1895? And then they were growing watermelon in Foul Furies in 1905.
Man.
So they had a lot going.
Yeah.
First watermelons ever grown in Texas, Foul Furies, Texas. And there's pictures of these little children with these long watermelons eating them.
Hmm. And they're so refreshing in the summertime.
Oh, my gosh. There's nothing better than a good watermelon.
Oh, yeah. Nice, juicy, sweet one. Mm-mm.
Yes.
Mm.
Always red ones.
Yeah. Well, and since we're almost there now, it's time to now I got watermelon out of the brain.
There you go.
Wow. Neat. How cool. And it happened right here in Texas, no doubt.
Right here in Texas, another Texas great story about a great guy and a great ranch.
Biggest worldwide. That's impressive, too. Wow. How cool.
Yes, it is.
This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You know, and you wonder, this has crossed my mind. Did he think, man, this is a great chance to make a boat ton of money? Or did he do it because he just loved the work? Or I don't even know how you come up with something.
I think
like
he was a brilliant man, and he said, you know, we need butter. I'm going to make butter. And he just did it. And then he just figured out how to do it. The guy was brilliant in the 1800s. Making butter and selling this butter all over Texas. Now, I don't know how long it took before it was all over the state. I don't know. But we know he started it right there, and he had to have ways to keep it cold, and I think that he had cellars. Now, I may be wrong. I'll research that and let you know.
Yeah.
But how else could he have kept all this butter cold?
I don't know. Wow. He saw a need and went for it. And he not only did he go for it, he went for, you know, he shot for the moon and hit it.
That's right.
Wow.
And I wonder what the man was worth.
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, I mean, man.
Yeah. If you own that much, you got to, even the 1800s, it had to be a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then once you sell it to the Dairy Farmers Association, man, I mean, that's just, that had to have been a big check. If they're interested enough.
I bet it was a huge check.
Wow. Man.
Yeah.
That is really cool. Well, since we're not all entrepreneurs that way, we have to find other ways to make money. So here
that's
we are
right.
in our world, because I honestly think everything that's ever going to be created has already been invented. So I don't know that there's even anything else to make, but maybe. So until then, we talk about, I know we kind of talked a little bit about life settlements, but we have not gone over the three risks. And I know that probably it's something that we need to cover real quick. So with a life settlement, what is the first biggest one?
The greatest risk is the premium. If it goes over, you have to pay premium. Always check the premium when you go into a policy, know what it is and know what your risks are. And that's the biggest risk of all is it could go over. And you would have to pay premium. So you need to know that up front in advance what your premium is going in, okay? The second risk is that, remember, it's not liquid until it comes back. And until that person passes away, it is in the policy and it's not liquid. But once that policy matures, it is liquid and you can do, you can reinvest, you can take some money out if you need, whatever you need to do. The third and the least risk of all is if a life insurance company ever went under. We haven't had one go under in years and years, and they're worth so much now. We're in the billions. So now they're probably the safest thing in America is a life insurance company.
And to do a life settlement, you do have to be accredited. So what does that mean?
You must be accredited. You've got to either make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your home. You cannot put your home in your asset class. So you would have to add up your assets or make sure you make $200,000 every year. So it's either or. You can make $200,000 and come in, or you need to make sure you're worth $1 million without your house.
Okay, so that's for those are the parameters for a life settlement. What about an annuity? What kind of requirements are there to do an annuity? Or are there any?
Okay, yeah, there are requirements. In order to do an annuity, you've got to have good cash flow. You've got to have assets, and your debt cannot be more than your assets are. So we have to check your assets versus your debt. Make sure you have enough money to live on and that you have assets if you have an emergency. So all those questions are asked on the annuity sheet.
Okay. They're both conservative. They're both completely independent of the stock market, right?
That's right.
Okay. And for whichever one is best for each person, it really just kind of depends. You know, are you looking for something more long term? Do you want, you know, faster turnaround, like with the life settlement? It just kind of depends. But you do have a bunch of people that do both, I think.
I have a lot of people that do both, yes. And then I have some that do one or the other. So it's an individual thing. You have to think about it. We have to go over everything, and then you'll know for sure.
Okay. So as people are looking at other options, trying to get out of the stock market, looking for something a little more conservative, should they do any preparation, any homework, anything before they come see you? Or should they just come in and...
I would. Yes, I'd make sure that I had either $200,000 or that I had the assets, that I had at least $100,000. Most people bring $200,000 or $300,000 or more. So those are important things. How much liquid you have, how much emergency money you have set aside. You have to have emergency money. But most of our people have all that because they are accredited. So an accredited person is going to have emergency money in another location, okay?
Okay. And for people to come talk to you, because obviously I'm sure people have a lot of questions, especially for somebody who has never done anything like this before. They want to get started. They want to kind of look for something more conservative. They do need to make an appointment. I assume you have availability this coming week.
We do, and we would be glad to talk to people.
Cool. All right. And one last time, for people to call and make an appointment, come talk, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Fay Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Fay Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold. This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.